Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett, the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's All Ours, our very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films The Peanut Butter Falcon, Chained for Life, and It Chapter 2. That sounds pretty cool. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Jill. I am just back from London, England, where I participated in a two-day conference on an obscure Alfred Hitchcock film. And I am now back and ready to talk about some of the movies that are out there in America right now.
How obscure was the film before you start?
Oh, it's so interesting. Yeah, there was a two-day conference put together by some very fine Hitchcockians on a movie called Under Capricorn, which is from the late 1940s and is a movie that even most Hitchcock admirers have never really heard of. And it's an atypical Hitchcock film. It's not a thriller. It's more of a melodrama. Stars Ingrid Bergman and Joseph Cotten. And I don't regard it as one of the great Hitchcock films, but it's an interesting Hitchcock film. And maybe this conference did a little bit to lift it out of its obscurity. However, moving on to the movies of the moment, as opposed to the late 1940s, I'd like to start today by talking about The Peanut Butter Falcon, which, yes, it's an unusual title, and it's a title which kind of put me off the movie a little bit. It's a little bit too cute for me. But it turns out to be a very nice movie, by no means a great movie, but a very nice movie directed by the team of Michael Schwartz and Tyler Nilsson. And this is a movie which unusually stars, as one of its main characters, a young man named Zach Gottsagen, who has Down syndrome. And he plays a character named Zach who has Down syndrome. And he, for reasons that have to do with the kinds of way in which our society never seems to have enough money to help take care of people who need taken care of, instead of living in a place which is really designed to help and nurture people like him, he's been shunted off into a retirement home. One of the other residents there is played by Bruce Dern, who these days makes his living playing ancient people because he is an ancient person. And he's only in the very beginning of the movie. But that's the kind of place. It's a place that is better suited to people like the ancient Bruce Dern than the young, in his early 20s, Zach. But Zach doesn't like it there. Not surprisingly, and he runs away more than once. And finally, early in the film, he runs away again, and this time he makes it. And he soon hooks up with a young ne'er-do-well, slightly older than him, a guy in his 30s, played by Shia LaBeouf, a man named Tyler. And these two become an unlikely pair of traveling companions. Zach, the young man in his 20s with Down syndrome, and Shia LaBeouf playing the guy in his 30s who is a ne'er-do-well and who is also on the run, including on the run from some other ne'er-do-wells. And the two of them are traveling along and trying to get away from the people who are chasing them and having various adventures along the way. Also in the film, I have to mention our John Hawks, who plays one of the people who is chasing Tyler, the Shia LaBeouf character, and Thomas Hayden Church, who shows up near the end of the movie. Interesting actors, all of them. The movie The Peanut Butter Falcon has been compared with Mark Twain, partly because for a teensy little bit of the movie, they are on a raft, kind of going down a river a little bit like Huckleberry Finn. But I didn't find much Mark Twain resonance in this movie. It's kind of a picaresque yarn. It's always moving from place to place. And the ultimate destination is, of all things, a wrestling school. Zach, the young man with Down syndrome, his sort of fantasy in life is that someday he could become a professional wrestler, and he has heard about this wrestling school called the Saltwater Redneck. Talk about the Peanut Butter Falcon and the Saltwater Redneck. This is a movie which is full of cute little names. Eventually they do make it to the wrestling school, which turns out to be a very, very different kind of a place than they had dreamed of, and that's where the climax of the movie takes place. One other character I have to mention, which is a young woman from that old people's home, home, who is through the whole movie chasing after Zach, trying to find him, played in a wonderful performance by Dakota Johnson, who is a lovely actor and who here gets to play a very lovely person. So again, the movie is peripatetic. It's constantly kind of wandering from one place to another. I found it all very engaging, all very watchable, a lot of interesting and sort of semi-slightly exotic locations in the American landscape. I did find the whole ending of the movie, when they finally make it to the so-called wrestling school, I found that to be completely far-fetched. And whereas the whole movie, you can sort of believe it as it's happening if you suspend your disbelief and kind of go along with it, I found the ending way too over the top and just not believable at all. Also, the movie is sort of prone to stereotyping. I respect its courage in having this young man play a character with Down syndrome, and it's a wonderful job of acting, and it's terrific to see a person with a disability get to be showcased as having real talent and really seems to know what he is doing and gives a wonderful empathetic and sympathetic performance in the movie. So that's all just fine. But in other respects, I found the movie sort of prone to stereotyping and kind of, you know, what I'll call redneck characters, because that's a word used in the movie. You know, it was not exactly to my taste. But look, it's a good-hearted movie in most ways, and it's a likable movie, and people seem to be enjoying it. And so it's out there, and it's worth seeing if you want to see something that's a little bit off the beaten path. Another movie which strays off the beaten path, especially in one of its main performances, is Chained for Life. This is a movie about the making of a movie, and it's a very unusual story that I don't think quite holds together, but it has some very offbeat qualities, which I sort of have to respect. We have here a movie, by the way, written and directed by Aaron Schimberg, which is, again, it's about the making of a movie, and one of the main characters is an actress named Mabel, played by Jess Wexler. And she is appearing in this movie, and the movie is not exactly coming together in the way you might expect. The movie is being directed by a German auteur who is just known in the movie as the director, played by Charlie Korsmo. And there are rumors about him. Maybe he's not really German. Maybe he's not really a great director. Maybe he doesn't really know what he's doing. But he is directing this movie, which is some sort of a horror movie, which has to do with a face transplant or something like that. But the most interesting thing about the movie Chained for Life, which is a movie about the making of this movie, is one of the actors who plays one of the other main characters, a character named Rosenthal, who is played by Adam Pearson. Now, Adam Pearson is a very unusual actor who has neurofibromatosis, the disability made most famous by the so-called Elephant Man. Who was, of course, the main character played by John Hurt with a lot of makeup in the David Lynch movie of many years ago. And in this case, this actor in Chained for Life, Adam Pearson, does not use a lot of makeup. He actually has neurofibromatosis, and he plays an actor with that disability in the movie. So this is the most unusual thing and the most memorable thing about Chained for Life. Adam Pearson is a terrific actor. He just does a sensational job. Again, all of this is real stuff in the movie that we are watching. He really has this condition, and he really does look like this. He really looks very much like the Elephant Man. This is not Adam Pearson's first movie, by the way. And he gives a wonderful performance, and the best parts of the movie are his interactions with the actress named Mabel. The two of them do just beautifully in their scenes together and have just all kinds of resonance with each other. A lot of chemistry there. So Chained for Life, as I said, I don't think it quite comes together. I'm always kind of interested in what we call in the trade reflexive movies, movies that in some way are about the movies, movie making that is about movie making. And this is an example of that. It seems to be influenced by Robert Altman, maybe to some extent by his movie The Player, which is very much a movie about movie making. I don't think that the screenplay by Aaron Schimberg really quite quite is all connected. In times it seems a little bit discombobulated, and some of the secondary characters seem kind of underwritten. But it is so worth seeing, if only for the two main performances, by which I mean Jess Wexler as Mabel and Adam Pearson as Rosenthal, and especially Adam Pearson. It's just remarkable. And the same thing goes for the Peanut Butter Falcon. To see the kind of people who, throughout almost the entire history of movie making, certainly of Hollywood movie making and American movie making, would have been simply excluded. Nobody wants to look at people like this, would have been the conventional wisdom. And to see them finally get their time on the screen, and to see them do wonderful work, and wonderful work in bringing to life people who are in some ways like them. That's a wonderful thing to see. And for that reason, if no other, and there are others, I do support Chain for Life altogether. It's an interesting movie, in some ways a good movie, and it certainly has this wonderful quality of compassion for the kinds of actors who are no longer completely excluded from the screen. And that is a very, very good thing. And now, as the Monty Python people used to say, for something completely different. It Chapter 2. You guessed it, folks. It is the sequel to It, the movie made not too long ago about the very long Stephen King novel It. And now we have the sequel. I won't say the long-awaited sequel, because we haven't been waiting that long. It Chapter 2. And it takes place 27 years after the first movie, It. We've only had to wait a couple of years for this sequel, which takes place 27 years later. And again, it is based on that very, very long Stephen King novel, which is about a bunch of young people who get threatened by a horrible evil in a New England town called Derry. And the personification of this evil is an evil, ghostly, supernatural clown named Pennywise. And Pennywise menaces everybody and does all kinds of horrific things along the way. So, first, to refresh our memories, and my memory needed some refreshing, I saw It when it came out, and I've actually read the very long Stephen King novel. And, you know, going into It Chapter 2, I suddenly realized, my gosh, I don't really remember either the novel or the movie, even though it was not that long ago, all that well, because it was really ultimately very unmemorable. So to refresh all of our memories about that unmemorable movie, and in my opinion, that unmemorable novel, we had these young people who are in school, and they call them – sort of middle school kids, and they call themselves the Losers Club because they're all sort of bullied by the other kids. And they are the ones who stumble upon some of the secrets of Pennywise the clown and become Pennywise's great enemies. And the whole thing becomes a duel between them and Pennywise. And they more or less win that horrible battle when they are kids, but they all vow at the end, if this evil ever returns to our town, Derry, we will come back and we will combat it once again. So now in the sequel, It Chapter 2, we are in fact 27 years later. And by the way, the movie directed by the same guy, Andy Muschietti, now the evil is back, and the phone calls come. One of the members of the old Losers Club who never left town phones up the – he is now in the police. He phones up the others and says, yes, it is back. Pennywise is back. We must all return. We must all fight him again. And so most of the others return. One of them does not, and I won't tell you why not, but one of them does not, but the others do. They come back. They reconvene in the Chinese restaurant in town, and they say, okay, we've got to do this. We've got to fight it. We've got to fight Pennywise again. And so we now have these young characters from the first movie who are all grown-ups in the second movie, and that is what the movie is about. Now, the first thing, I mentioned the long Stephen King novel. I really like some of Stephen King's long stuff. I think The Stand is maybe his best novel. It's very long. Also, The Shining is a terrific novel. I've read that more than once. It's very long. It's just very long as a novel. And now we have two movies based on that long novel. And I got to say right now that It Chapter 2, get ready for this, folks, is almost 3 hours long. So I have nothing against long movies. When they have a reason to be long, this movie does not have a reason to be this long. It goes on and on and on, and it digresses and it diverges. And it tells its story reasonably well, but it tells it in a very inefficient way. This movie could have been so much tighter. There's just so much empty space. There's so much kind of extra stuff in this movie that we don't really need. So that's one of the problems with it. Another problem with it is that I just didn't find it very scary. It starts out with a couple of very, very nasty scenes. One scene of homophobic violence, another scene of misogynistic violence, which I just found kind of nasty. And the movie never gets that nasty again, interestingly, when it gets to the supernatural stuff. So I was relieved that it didn't get that nasty again. But the supernatural stuff, which ought to at least be scary, I never found it that scary. And some scenes I just found completely out of control. For example, there's a scene in the Chinese restaurant when there becomes a big scuffle and people are smashing up furniture and stuff. And I just found it, this is very early in the film, very, very unpersuasive. So overall, I have to say that It Chapter 2, which is being promoted to death, so I imagine a lot of people will see it, if only for that reason, I cannot recommend it. I love a good horror movie. It Chapter 2 is not an especially good horror movie. And above all, it is a not especially good horror movie, which is almost 3 hours long. My recommendation is stay away from It Chapter 2. And I am just worried because that is a very long novel and it has a lot of chapters. And I hope we don't have a whole lot of chapters of the movie franchise of It. And that is the end of my somewhat cynical story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films, The Peanut Butter Falcon, Chained for Life, and It Chapter 2.